from KQED.
Before we get to this week's episode, I have a favor to ask you, dear listeners. Since you know a lot about us by this point, 160 episodes, that's a lot. We naturally want to know a bit more about you and what you think of our show. So we created a cute little survey, which you can find at surveymonkey.com/r/thecooler. Again, that's surveymonkey.com/r/thecooler. So do us a solid and fill it out. We really appreciate it. Love you forever. Now on with the show. Hey everyone, I'm Emmanuel.
I'm Kali.
And I'm Jamitra.
And we're the hosts of
The Cooler.
Everyone's a critic, right? Well, if you're Lizzo, Ariana Grande, or Michael Che, you'd probably say that means everyone's a jerk. So we're going to unpack the latest wave of stars hating on critics.
We'll also be introducing y'all to an Egyptian pharaoh some dudes don't want us to know about.
And the pop culture gods provide me with a rare chance at a duo.
Aria versus Cersei. Jets versus sharks. Hmm? Whole milk versus my stomach.
Oh.
Guys, the earth is filled with things that will quite simply always be feuding. And one of those is stars versus the critics who say things about them. Something has been in the water because a bunch of famous folks, even like ones you might not have expected, have been lashing out at critics.
Hmm. The thinnest of skin, you can see through it.
So thin. Transparency. Oh. First up in the dock is Lizzo.
Oh, I love her.
Oh, sweet, lovely Lizzo.
We do love her, but I think she's wrong in this one.
Okay, break it down.
Exactly. So after what I'm about to say, folks might love her a little bit less. She has this new album, 'Cause I Love You. Pretty much universally great reviews. But there's this one review that comes out in Pitchfork that Lizzo absolutely hates. And she hates it so much that she tweets thusly. People who review albums and don't make music themselves should be unemployed.
Oh, wow.
That is very harsh.
Especially in light of a lot of critics being laid off in this economy.
Right? Don't evoke the ghost of the economy.
Please don't.
Next up. I'm sorry, Emmanuel. Ariana Grande.
You know, she has her good days and her bad days.
Is this about that tattoo again?
Oh, Little Finger Barbecue or whatever.
No. She's been through a lot.
The badly translated tattoo. She has been through a lot and we do give her a pass, but this latest one, I'm not so sure. Anyway, the backstory is she performs this song with Justin Bieber. She performs it live at a show. Justin Bieber is so clearly lip syncing. And then there's E! News' nightly pop show with Morgan Stewart decides to take like a lighthearted swipe at this very obvious display of fakery by Justin Bieber. And this is what they say.
I'll take every single piece of the blame if you want me to.
No!
He got the lip part right of lip sync.
Okay. Poor song started before him. Okay. I did not realize it was going to be that bad.
Is it bad that I could tell he was lip syncing just from the audio?
It's when you watch it, it is ridiculous. His mic is like down by his knees, and then he realizes the music has started, and he picks it up and starts like panicking. It's wonderful.
He forgot about the performance of the performance.
He forgot about the lips.
Was it similar to the Ashley Simpson? Do we all remember that?
He did not jig, though. You have to jig afterwards for it to be iconic.
Okay.
I've done some really strong work on trying to forget Ashley Simpson, so if you could not bring that up anymore.
Hey, yeah.
She's living happily ever after with
leave Ashley alone.
With the descendant of Diana Ross. So, I mean, just like, come on.
Actually, fair play. So, Justin Bieber, he gets mad at the show with Morgan Stewart. He tweets some stuff about, like, negativity, man. Why can't everyone just be cool? And then Ariana takes it one step further. Mm. And she chimes in on Twitter saying, and I quote, "People are so lost. One day everyone that works at all them blogs will realize how unfulfilled they are and purposeless what they're doing is, and hopefully shift their focus elsewhere. That's going to be a beautiful ass day for them. I can't wait for them to feel lit inside."
Is this the same child who licked that donut?
It is.
Okay, lest we forget.
My favorite clapback to this particular Ariana Grande moment was the Jezebel writer Maria Sherman saying, "Bitch, I was unfulfilled and purposeless long before the blog."
Listen, anytime you start the sentence with bitch, like I'm done.
Same as starting a sentence with listen.
Mm-hmm. Listen.
Yeah, when you know what's going
to happen. You hear me? My kids hear me say listen, they know what's up.
I'm going to do that right now. Listen, SNL's Michael Che, I love that guy, but he got pissy.
I don't.
Really?
Oh.
Interesting.
I don't know if it's related to what you're about to say, but he's been sliding into the DMs of someone who was criticizing him or one of his friends, and it was a trans person, and he repeatedly misgendered them over and over and over on purpose.
Okay, well, scrap that. I don't love him anymore, and particularly not after this, because he got pissy with a writer from UpRocks called Stephen Hayden, who wrote this actually quite innocuous piece, not even about Michael Che, about Michael Che's SNL Weekend Update partner, Colin Jost, about how Colin... Yeah, exactly. He's like, bleh, he's like a nothing burger. And he was writing about how he was a nothing burger and had kind of become the internet's punching bag. And Michael Che flips out on, I believe, Instagram is his platform of choice, personally attacking this writer. It gets ugly. Last but not least, in this rogues gallery of very famous rich people with nothing better to do than to slam people who probably don't make a lot of money blogging online, Olivia Munn.
Ooh, this one's bad.
Really? And I'm I really like Olivia. Don't tell me. She's got the cute little dog walker, you know.
Does she?
Yeah, she's got some dog walking venture. Not important, but I do like her.
I mean, you might know her from such films as
I remember her from this one film. I don't remember the name of it.
See?
Don't remember the name of her character.
She's been
in
films.
But she's gorgeous. I just
exactly.
Give her that.
She's gorgeous. She could just get on with it and be happy. But no, she wants to unleash. And she unleashes on the women behind this blog called Go Fog Yourself. Are you familiar with Fog Yourself?
I follow them, yes.
It's a great blog. It's weirdly warm-hearted for a snarky blog. And it dissects the fashions that famous people are wearing. But it never talks about bodies. It never talks about weight. And they're really explicit and intentional in how they do this, which I think is really great. And also, they're really funny as well. They say some very funny stuff about clothes.
Yeah, this is not like the fashion criticism of Joan Rivers, where it's very harsh and about women's bodies and faces.
Mm-hmm. I was just wondering when Auntie Joan was going to make an appearance. We cannot talk about criticism without talking about her.
But Olivia Munn doesn't think it's sweet. She doesn't think it's warm and funny. She says she wants to release a personal essay on what she calls the ugly behaviors of the Go Fog Yourself girls.
The point of the essay is to release the essay, not to say you're going to release the essay, right? You just...
Also, girl, you already lost if you're releasing an essay on Twitter. It's a screen grab of 2 pages worth of content, link to a blog. But she hates bloggers, so she doesn't have
one. She does. She put it up on Twitter saying, here's my essay about why I think that Go Fug Yourself is mean. And also, like, she equates her struggle with the struggle of some high schoolers who are being sexually harassed.
Okay, girl.
It's a whole mess.
How much you want to bet she shopped that to a few people?
Well, not enough, because she misspelled said, no, it's you. And it's.
Ooh.
Apostrophe was there when it shouldn't have been.
Well, I didn't say they copy edited it. I said she shopped it to a few websites, and they were like, actually, no, girl.
Perfect.
Oh, gotcha.
And so then she said, well, let me just go ahead and post
She could have released it on Medium. She didn't even do that.
KQED Pop.
Oh, no. But, denied.
Anyway, listen, what I'm trying to say is there has been a tidal wave of very rich, famous people getting very angry with bloggers. Why is this happening now? What's in the water? I got some theories and I want to run it by you guys.
Please do.
Number one, stan culture.
Uh-huh.
Right? Famous people who are used to being popular, there is this sense of outrage when they get criticized. It's like, I'm not used to this, I don't like this, and I don't want it to happen. And also being accustomed to praise means that you have A, supporters, and B, you know you have supporters. So you know that if you react against the criticism, there is this army of people who will rally to your defense. Mm-hmm. And I really feel this is what a lot of these folks are doing. It's like unleashing the hounds.
That's why I never dated athletes in high school. They were too popular. Go aside. If it all goes south, then you're screwed, right?
If it all goes soft, you're screwed.
Wow.
That was a great Freudian slip. That you
this is a Viagra commercial. Print it.
But, okay, it's worked. So, like, the critical establishment are like, oh, they're like porcupines. Like, you touch them and they go, don't hurt us. But especially with Ariana Grande, like, those stans, those fans really came forward and they were horrible. There was one blogger who kind of clapped back and said, don't criticize us bloggers, we don't make any money and this is gross, and just because we're not dancing to songs other people have written for us, you know, don't denigrate what we do. And people sent her death threats. It was
oh my God.
Horrible. Yeah, don't Google this stuff because it's really nasty what they said to this girl.
I think the stan culture piece is an important thing to point out because, if I'm not mistaken, I feel like Nicki Minaj has been through this before. When she criticizes people or she's upset about something, her stans will come after them.
Oh, she like sicks her followers on them.
Yeah, she's like, she's been known to do that.
Well, speaking of sicking your followers on people, Olivia Munn included in her essay a photo of the Fug Girls so that people would attack their appearance. Like, how dare they come for you, celebrity, beautiful person? Like, how can they critique your looks? And it's like, well, Aval, they weren't critiquing your looks.
Nope.
They were critiquing a garment. There's a difference.
A garment which Olivia Munn pays a stylist to put on her body. She walks out for a paparazzi photo call, has her photo taken because that's the deal, and then gets butthurt when someone says, I don't like that pantsuit, and equates it to sexual harassment in a high school.
Whatever happened to like the saying, any press is good press? I feel like celebrities used to embrace that, right? The Kardashians certainly do. I feel like celebrities used to embrace that, and as long as people are talking about you, then it's great, right?
That used to be the MO. But now it's like, oh, I want people to rally around me. Mm-hmm. I like that feeling. It's like, maybe this is a bad analogy. But
please,
you know.
But you're going to say it anyway, so let's go for it.
So like, we have Instagrams and we have our followers, and when we post a selfie or whatever, people are like, yeah, slay, whatever. What if someone who wasn't one of our followers was like, you know what, that was just a 6 out of 10, which is what the Lizzo review was. It wasn't even, it was a mixed bag. It was like 6.7. And if someone said 6.7, it's like, well, my 800 followers, I will have you know, love this photo. How dare you? Everyone attack.
I'm accustomed to being a 10. Thank you very much. I read the Pitchfork review of the Lizzo album that she so hated by Rawia Kamir, and it's really thoughtful. This isn't some Perez Hilton hit job. It's actually like really scholarly. And it talks about Lizzo's album and examines it in like the place of the wider culture in like electoral politics and social change. And she writes how Lizzo's music performs an important social function, even if the sound might disappoint. Like, this is no hatchet job. It's like a bona fide music review. It's not snark. Just because she's not giving it a 10 out of 10 doesn't mean it's crap.
And why focus on this one review instead of all of the other ones that are praising you? And she's drawing more attention to it. No one would have really thought of it if she wasn't like, go to pitchfork.com and read this thing and then wonder why I'm making such a big deal about it.
But, you know, it could be along the same lines as sort of like that Cardi B thread where she's kind of like new to fame and she's got a crash course and she hasn't quite had an opportunity to adjust and have the media training that they give you to answer all these questions and deal with all this criticism in a polished way. So she's just like lashing out. I think that combined with the fact that, you know, celebrities have social media, so they don't have to wait for a press release. Our president doesn't even wait for official press release. We just all word vomit on each other. Why not?
Also, here's a note. If people who aren't musicians can't comment on music, people who aren't professional critics can't comment on criticism.
Well,
you can't have it both ways.
Excuse me, pot? Is that pot?
Yeah.
Pot, is that you?
Also, while we're talking about pot,
I see kettle.
Let's talk about glass houses, because Olivia Munn is saying the Fug Girls are talking about women's bodies.
Oh, but she has form in that sense, right?
And she has a history of making fun of people's bodies specifically.
Excuse me?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So put down the stones. You're in a glass house. You don't want to pick this fight.
Don't
just take the L.
Them.
Just take the L. Your pantsuit wasn't great.
It's
not
really
that big of a deal.
Thing, it's not even about you. Like, if we're talking about clothes, we're talking about clothes. It's not even your body. Fire your stylist. That's who you need to have the conversation
with. The person
with.
That you pay.
You want to write an essay to somebody? That's who she should have wrote the essay to. Like, listen, girl, don't you ever have me out there looking like that's what she started to. That's who you're supposed to reserve the bitch for. Like, you started.
Well, this is what I want to ask you guys. What you think of this? Like, criticism has been around for a long time. Mm-hmm. It's not just like hot or not. This is like how we think about our place in the world and the stuff we consume. Also, being a critic is a job in the same way that being an artist is a job. And Emmanuel, you brought up Michael Che's pretty bad form in this regard. This is not the first time he has done this. Once he hated on a Daily Beast reporter called Samantha Allen. She didn't like a joke about trans people that he made. He then put out this scathing thing on Instagram, put out her email, and basically invited people to send her hate mail. And when she was asked for a comment, she said, "The way I see it, both Michael Che and I were doing our jobs. He recorded a stand-up special and I wrote an article."
Wow.
It's a job. But with that in mind, I want to ask you, guys, can you take criticism well?
After everything I just said, yes, of course. I am the paragon of receiving constructive criticism, applying it, and not being in my feelings.
The key is constructive.
Constructive. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's how you know.
And if it's not, brush it to the side and don't write a thesis on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Moral of the story.
Let me ask you this. What's your personal pain point? What's the thing that if someone comes for you on, you're like, oh, it hurts so much? Because with Lizzo, it's clearly her artistry. It's her music. It's being called the modern day Natasha Bedingfield, which is a really horrible thing to call someone.
Wow. Pocket full of sunshine.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I mean, I guess like Lizzo, it would be my writing. But actually, no. I receive criticism about my writing and this podcast. And I'm like, okay, one person didn't like it, but all of these people over here do. And I'm going to focus on the audience that is vibing with me and make stuff for them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's clearly not for this other person. And that's okay.
You choose where to look. Chamidra, how about you?
I'll say, I think I'm pretty good at accepting constructive criticism. I think my one pain point is once I asked Nia for advice on shoes.
Oh, it's your daughter?
And she criticized my hair.
What?
And that one hurt.
Not asked.
Yes.
Brutal.
Okay, there's this critic called Emily Yoshida. She's fantastic. And when this happened, she tweeted the following. God, this wave of pop stars are a bunch of f***ing fascists.
Wow.
If I hadn't just quit blogging in order to feel more lit, that's a reference to the Ariana Grande thing, I would double down on making fun of them. And obviously, taking it there and calling someone a fascist, calling them a Nazi, is strong. But there is this idea that once you start saying that people shouldn't express their opinions, and especially the press shouldn't express their opinions, that's kind of worrying because it's all about the company you keep. And there's other people who don't like a free press. Right?
I could think of a few, one in particular.
It's because they're the enemy of the people, you might say.
Uh-huh. And like hyperbole and joking aside about fascists, saying that people don't have the right to pass commentary on something, whether it's like art or an album or the news or something someone's done, is actually really dangerous. And teaching that to a generation of new young people, that's kind of quite frankly terrifying.
Hmm.
Okay, guys, in summary, we've learned being thin-skinned is not a good look for anyone. Absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And we should be very wary of anyone not willing to hear criticism.
Beware. All right, there are a ton of Game of Thrones takes on the internet right now, including my own recaps.
So many.
Go read them. Hint, hint. But one particular take caught my eye. It's by Megan O'Keefe, who's a writer for Decider.com, who tweeted the following. I'm so tired of arguing with people about Cersei's short hair. Yes, it's short and masculine. That is the point. Either read Feast of Crows, which is the fourth Game of Thrones book for the people who don't know, where she starts to get off on role-playing as a man, or better yet, read up on Hatshepsut, the female pharaoh who sported a beard in court.
Oh. A lot to unpack there.
Yes. So obviously, as a noted history geek, I took Megan's suggestion and I read up on Hatshepsut, who I'm now going to be calling Hattie because I can't this whole time.
From henceforth. Henceforth.
Glad about
Hattie.
That.
So a lot of you listeners responded to our survey, which you can still take at surveymonkey.com/r/thecooler. And you guys wrote that you're missing my weird little historical jaunts.
Yes.
So guess what? Ask. You shall receive. This is one of those moments.
From your lips to Emmanuel's ears.
Uh-huh.
Basically God.
And then back to your ears through this podcast.
That's true.
See how that works there?
So let's commence this time travel expedition with a song. Walk like an Egyptian. That's weird. That only took us back to 1986.
That's so strange.
Huh. Let's try that again.
Is that the music to Stargate, the television series?
It's not, but it could have been.
It could have been.
So, I don't know if you guys noticed, but it worked. We are in 1504 BC.
Hello.
We made it.
And will I make it, though, is the question.
Yeah. Everyone here is a person of color.
Okay.
Yeah, you're good.
Just want to look around, make sure.
Yeah, you're good. So, our girl, Hattie, is born to a pharaoh, Thutmose. And if that sounds like the most, it's because he was doing the most. For instance, he famously dangled the naked corpse of a Nubian chief on the prow of his ship as a fun way to let any challengers know you don't want these problems.
So it's like one of those little pine trees that you hang in your dash?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think it's a fuzzy dust.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Basically.
Just dangle it.
I think that's what the kids call a weird flex.
Yes, the weirdest. So, Daddy doing the most, that's what we're going to call him, taught Hattie everything he knew about being an effective leader. So he's like a dash of charm, but hit him with the ruthlessness if they ask for it.
Mm-hmm.
Don't let anyone push you around. So fast forward a bit and Daddy doing the most stops doing anything at all because hashtag dead.
Oh, he died.
R.I.P.
We don't know what the cause was because back in the day, if a mosquito looked at you wrong, R.I.P. deceased. You're done. So Daddy doing the most, his death, means that Hattie becomes the pharaoh, right? Because she is the oldest child. That's how this works.
That's, I would think. However.
Oh, no. Mm. One of the only things older than ancient Egypt is the patriarchy.
Oh, I wonder when they were going to show up.
They're always with us.
Always.
The rules dictated that the title of pharaoh passed down to any son by the pharaoh and the queen. The queen was Hattie's mom. Hattie's mom only had daughters. So it has to go to a son that the pharaoh had with a side chick.
Hold on.
Yes.
Hold.
Yes.
On.
This sounds like some English royal family shit.
It also sounds like some Game of Thrones shit.
Yeah, listen, I was like, this is a Jon Snow tale if I ever heard one.
Because this son also is Hattie's husband. So
she married her half-brother. Is that what
I'm hearing?
Yes, she
did.
Okay.
So this new pharaoh, Thutmose II, he's remembered as being, quote, frail and ineffectual. So we'll call him hubby doing the least.
Mm. Okay, yeah.
Unlike daddy doing the most.
I would like to note that frail and ineffectual is my LinkedIn. For May.
So this guy ended up croaking in his 20s because the 27 curse is back at it again.
I'm just saying.
Like Amy, Kurt.
Jim. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And now Thutmose II. So he and Hattie had a daughter, but no son. So the role of pharaoh went to a son he had with a side chick.
How you gonna continue?
Mm.
You're still not seeing the error in your ways. But okay, go ahead, continue.
So there was a problem, though. This son that was the new pharaoh was a literal baby.
Oh, no.
Which inspired Hattie to rightfully say, y'all,
come on now.
We cannot have Tommy Pickles from the Rugrats running this empire. He's cute and all, but his policies are literally finger paintings on scraps of papyrus.
I'm saying.
But if you go to imwithhatshepsut.gov, you'll see that I've got grown women policies out the wazoo.
Yes.
So her elevator pitch worked. She was named as pharaoh, and her first agenda item was to officially change the Egyptian national anthem from this.
Baby shark, do-do-do-do-do, baby shark, do-do-do-do-do, baby shark.
Is there no safe place for me?
Never.
There isn't. She changed it to this.
I'm that bitch without a motherfucking doubt. I could either make it rain or cause a motherfucking drought. Cut the check and show respect and keep my name from out your mouth. Be it. Bad bitch anthem. Get your fucking hands up. Get your hands up. Get your hands up.
I like her style already.
Yeah.
So do I. But not everyone was loving it.
But her hieroglyphs.
Right.
I've been waiting 5 minutes to make that joke.
That was good. Is that the title of this episode? It's the title of something. My mixtape. That's coming shortly. To put how major her ascendance to becoming pharaoh into context, Cleopatra would not arrive on the scene for 14 centuries.
So she was laying the groundwork here.
Yeah.
Okay.
14 centuries?
She's OG.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That's wild.
So because Hattie was, in the words of Trina, who we just heard, a, quote, bad bitch, Egypt started popping under her reign.
Mm-hmm.
Peace, check. Prosperity, yas. Art, iconic. Infrastructure, clockable. But dudes of her era still found ways to be salty.
Of course.
So she decided if they want a male ruler this bad, I'm going to serve them some macho realness in the court and in the statues. So all of a sudden, her statues went from being slender and dainty, dressed in queen's clothing, to beard wearing, broad chested, kingly. Yes.
Listen.
And then she changed her name, Beyonce, to Sasha Fierce. Hatshepsut to Matkare, which translates to the truth is the soul of the sun god. And this was her way of aligning with the gods and reminding everyone that I'm pharaoh, which means the deities wanted this to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a problem with that, just like my dad said, with the dangling body, you don't want these problems.
No.
She also was saying this.
Male or female, it make no difference. I stop the world. World stop.
Carry on.
So the next part of the story is not confirmed because the 5th century BC was a long time ago. So bring your grain of salt. Tommy from the Rugrats.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. How's he doing?
He's growing up.
Cool.
But he's just as salty as these other fools.
Oh, no.
He starts resenting his stepmom slash aunt. Don't forget.
Oh, yeah.
And there are some theories. Maybe he couldn't handle her badassery. Maybe he didn't like that she was doing such a good job that no one was really calling for him to be fair all of a sudden. So maybe he went around talking smack behind her back.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like something Joffrey would do.
She's not even my real mom. She can't tell me what to do. Yes, she can.
She can.
Because the gods told her so. Hattie probably didn't like this that much. And so I offer you a completely historical and accurate recreation of Hattie confronting Tommy from the Rugrats.
When I leave, you want to keep doing this. But then when I come around, you don't want to post up. So how about you just say to my face the things you've been saying about me?
What's good, Tommy? What's good?
What's good?
He should not take Hattie on, obviously, because he does not have the range. And he knew that. So he waited until she died in her 40s, 22 years into her role. And he decided, all right, now that she's dead, I'm going to get my revenge. So he is believed to have ordered the desecration of all of her statues and monuments, gouging the eyes out, chopping off their heads, hacking off the royal snake symbol from her forehead on all these statues. And archaeologists have said that these statues and relics relating to Hattie, quote, suffered almost every conceivable indignity.
So, in essence, he sought to erase her entire pharaohship. I feel like I've heard that narrative before.
Indeed, right? And I think it's rude. And I ask, why do you have to be mad?
Mm. But he is mad. Some historians believe that her reign was so successful that Tommy from the Rugrats, I'm dragging his name all over the place, wanted to prevent any future women from getting any big ideas, you know? Like, if they see themselves represented alongside kings, they'll assume they can become one. And we can't have that.
Again, I'm seeing familiar threads
here. Right? The stories are the same, but the times are different.
Mm-hmm.
Hattie's story wasn't really told until 1927 when an archaeologist named Herbert Winlock found all her destroyed stuff. Unfortunately, being a dude in the early 20th century meant that his telling of her story and the telling done by his historian bros was whack and misogynistic as hell.
No. He didn't
Here I thought we had a hero coming that was going to emerge.
No, I mean, this is some British dude, right? Just poking around in the sand?
Probably.
Yeah, of course.
In a Banana Republic suit. You know? Okay.
So Hattie was painted as a sneaky shrew who took candy, or in this case, the pharaohship, from a baby. Historian William C. Hayes, probably another British guy, called Hattie, quote, the vilest type of usurper.
Oh.
He also went on to say, quote, it was not long before this vain, ambitious, and unscrupulous woman showed her true colors. Okay, so men are out here in these history books, snatching power, snatching countries, and they're called brilliant strategists and like war heroes. And Hattie is a vile usurper.
Need I remind you, we're talking about a baby.
I would think that was a fair election.
So the same attributes that Hattie showed us, if it was within a man, it would be seen as the marks of a strong leader.
But is she likable?
Is she?
Is she? Doesn't seem it.
Huh. Historians also decided that there was no way Hattie was making all those money moves on her own. A man must have done all the thinking for her, of course. So they created this narrative of her sleeping with her chief minister and just being his puppet.
I'm so glad you said the chief minister. I was concerned about the cast of characters in this story.
So in 1961, historian Alan Gardner wrote, quote, not even a woman of the most virile character could have attained such a pinnacle of success without masculine support.
Oh.
Woof. Like,
jeez.
As we know all too well at this point, like, underestimating women is still a thing of our times.
Uh-huh.
Just imagine in 1920 when these people are in 1960 or whenever this guy said.
We say hush up and simmer down.
So another reason for historians to warp Hattie's story might have been that they just couldn't handle Hattie using all this masculinity to her advantage.
Hmm.
It's like, I see you guys benefiting from it. Why don't I try it on, literally, with a beard on my face? So the Smithsonian writes, quote, disconcerting to some scholars was her insistence on being portrayed as male with bulging muscles and traditional pharaonic false beard, variously interpreted by those historians as an act of outrageous deception, deviant behavior, or both.
Listen, she was writing a playbook. There were none before her. She had to figure this thing out on her own. You want a man? I give you a man.
Forgive me, but she sounds like the butch queen that the times called
for. Listen.
She walked so Cleopatra could run, and Cleopatra walked so that Elizabeth Warren could rush to the train so she could catch it. You saw that video? I did. She ran really fast. Okay, so thankfully, most present-day historians are woke enough, and have begun correcting some of this mythology around Hattie, kind of like the work that's been done around Mary Magdalene, you know, or like Marie Antoinette being like, she didn't actually say, let them eat cake. She wasn't this like heartless person. She was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. But the right place at the right time for a while, because the gambling and the drinking seems fun.
For sure.
So instead of painting Hattie's rise to Pharaoh as a devious power grab, some believe now that she might have had to declare herself as the king because some people, some invaders maybe, were trying to take control of the country. Meanwhile, Tommy from Rugrats is finger painting on papyrus, like saying. I said, and she had to be the one to step up. So ultimately, history is a matter of opinion. It's really down to who tells the story the most, which is kind of what Trump has been trying to do with, like, always saying no collusion, no collusion, no collusion. No matter what that report have said, it's still in a lot of people's brains. Oh, there was no collusion. That's a catchphrase. It's an earworm.
Say a lie, make it big, and repeat it a lot.
Right. So it's on us to question the stories we've been told growing up, especially those about women and minorities. I mean, come on.
Come on.
You know.
Although I missed this story. I wish I would have heard it when I was a child.
Well, you're hearing it right now. and now it's on us to trumpet Hatshepsut's story onto the next generation.
Can we write a children's book?
Please.
Okay.
So even in 2019, we're still having conversations about whether a woman is capable of being the president of the United States. But the answer is obvious. Women have been killing the game since the BC era, and they'll continue to do so whether some dudes in their feelings like it or not.
Maybe I'll wear a beard to my next job interview.
Please do. Send me a picture. It's the bee in the pig.
The bee in the pig. Sam Cooke said to us, a change gon' come. And he was right. I mean, we haven't changed all the way. But at least we're changing-ish. And I know that the change is rolling in because we are celebrating a fab milestone this week.
Tell me.
So I want us to raise a glass to a model by the name of Halima Aden. I don't know if this rings a bell.
Who are they?
She is making history this week by becoming the first Muslim model to wear a hijab and burkini on the cover. Well, I don't know if she's on the cover, but she's definitely in Sports Illustrated.
Oh, this guy.
Have you seen these photos?
The photos are amazing.
Gorgeous.
Double tap.
Okay, so let me give you the stats. She's a 21-year-old Somali-American model. She's a Virgo. Whoop, whoop. I'm a Virgo.
What does that mean?
It means that I'm a Virgo, and she's a Virgo, so I feel good about that.
It means she's judgmental AF.
Whoa.
Is that what you're saying about me?
Yeah.
Oh, excuse me.
That's why you're on the show.
He just judged you.
I thought we talked about this.
I have a Virgo and Mercury. Let's carry on.
Lastly, she's 5'5". Another. I am also 5'5". So I'm just, I feel a kinship is what I'm saying. Okay, listen.
Interesting.
You can be a model at 5'5". So basically, if you think that this is sort of like Miss Halima's first little rise to shine, you are sadly mistaken.
Oh.
So let me tell you. After immigrating from Kenya as a child, she went on to do this.
I became my college's first Muslim Somali student senator. And after that, I remember thinking, what next? And that's when I came across the Miss Minnesota USA pageant.
What next? She became the first woman to wear a hijab in the Miss Minnesota USA pageant. And she was a finalist.
Of course she was. And what's next after that? Presidency.
Listen, well, first she sashayed off the runway with her bouquet. Well, I guess she didn't get the bouquet because she was a runner-up. But she sashayed anyway in her hijab.
They give you like a couple of flowers.
Exactly. Straight to the Sports Illustrated cover. So there she is. She's fabulous. And I feel like there's a lot of darkness right now happening.
Yes.
I need a little bit of light. I need a little bit of light and I need a little bit of progress. So kudos to Halima for being fabulous. She talked in her interview with Sports Illustrated about never seeing anybody who looked like her, who was in a hijab, who represented her when she was a kid, and feeling really proud that she gets that moment. And one of the things that sticks with me out of that interview is she said, don't be afraid to be the first.
Yes.
Okay, so the next time you think something's never been done, you think about Halima. Pull up that photo because she's looking fab.
Halima, Hatshepsut, they out here. Setting examples.
And now on to the pit of the week.
I kind of don't want to do a pit after that.
Well,
I was riding high.
You know.
To me, the pit is that you talking about this fabulous woman, I feel like I've done nothing with my life.
21.
21.
You don't have to keep saying the number.
Well, there are a few people that could have gotten thrown in the pit this week. And originally, I was going to throw David Benioff, DB Wise. Miguel, was it Sapunik? I can't even pronounce the name. Miguel, I'll just leave it at Miguel.
The Game
of
Thrones
dudes. And
the
folks who are behind the Game of Thrones episode for robbing everyone, not everyone because I have a good television, but robbing most people of seeing that episode because it was pitch black. But
it was
again,
so dark.
Also, where did all the Dothraki go?
Yeah.
They're just dead because
dead,
they're brown.
Apparently.
We kill off the brown people. Anyway, all I'm saying is the episode took 55 days to film and we could have got a little bit of lighting. So, But anyway, as I said, moving on. I ain't got time for that because this week we lost someone. Filmmaker, screenwriter, director, John Singleton.
Yeah.
For those who don't know, John Singleton, he directed Boys in the Hood. He directed Higher Learning. So many films that were like my favorites growing up. And then I found out a few that I didn't even know about, like Too Fast, Too Furious. What?
Wait.
How did that happen?
You owe a debt to this man, Carly.
I believe I do. Also, youngest black filmmaker to be nominated for the Best Director Academy Award at the age of 24 for Boys in the Hood.
And need to point out, out of Poetic Justice and all of the masterpieces, never won. Let's just put that out there.
Good stuff never does. Good stuff never does.
Yeah. But anyway, when I think about John Singleton, I think about the fact that like growing up as a kid, watching Boys in the Hood, watching Higher Learning, he was just such a big part of my cultural experience. We're going to miss him so much. We're going to miss all the contributions he made, both in past, present. So I'll leave you with this tweet from Essence Magazine. John Singleton, house of hashtag black excellence. The first of his name.
Oh, God.
Breaker of molds. The speaker of truth, protector of black expression. Master of stories. Let's raise a glass.
Let's pour one out.
Every now and then, we miss our pop culture windows. Did you ever plank?
Planking?
Well, I never planked.
That was not the question I thought was going to come up.
Well, I'm just saying, some people planked.
Oh, I did. Yeah,
some people did the mannequin pose.
Ice bucket.
Yeah,
thing.
Like, you know, sometimes we wish we would have participated in those things. Sometimes not so much. But I have one that I wish that I would have participated in. Now, most of us last week were watching Homecoming on Netflix because Beyonce,
obviously.
Right? So last year when she did the performance at Coachella, I was one of the weirdos who stayed up really late and streamed it live.
Not weird.
Same.
Mm-hmm. And she did a little ditty that caught my attention. And I've spent the last few months before the release of Homecoming, stalking Instagram, listening to this song over and over again.
Oh.
And the song was so popular that it sparked a challenge.
I've been getting to the money. Everybody man. I think I'm getting too much money. Everybody man.
So that, my friends, is a rapper by the name of OT Genesis out of Atlanta. Now the song isn't nice, it's a nice little bop. But then Beyonce got her hands on it, and she just, in the words of Sheree Whitfield from season one or two of Real Housewives of Atlanta, when she shifted Kim's wig, she shifted it a little bit.
I just shifted
it. She just shifted it. So she didn't do a lot. She just added a few horns. She did a little, she blew on it, put her magic on it, and then she made it fabulous. And not only did she make it fabulous, she did a hot little choreo number that inspired the hashtag Everybody Mad challenge.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go and you look at the Everybody Mad hashtag on Instagram or Facebook, you'll see tons of people doing her choreography. Now, a busy mother of three, I ain't got time for all that. Okay. So last year when it was hot, I didn't have time to learn the choreography, but I got a little bit more time this year. And I feel like with the release of Homecoming, I can now learn the choreography and post it on social.
I would love that.
So let's ride out with Beyonce's remix on Homecoming of OT Genesis' Getting to the Money. And who's with me for this challenge? Somebody?
I'll
Anybody?
Do it.
I yes. volunteer as tribute.
Yes.
I just spent a whole lot of time overseas.
Thanks to David Marcus, Susie Recho, and Ashley Ann Craigbaum.
All original music is by Carolyn Pennypacker Riggs.
If you miss us, find us on social media. I'm at Excuse My Beauty.
I'm at Teacup in the Bay.
And I'm at Jamidra Says.
Bye.